Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I am proud to bring you the Satori Dialogues with Serpentis Satori. Greetings and welcome, Satori. How are you today?
All right.
I'm really looking forward to hearing about the 8 stages of honor, and you picked some interesting heroes for us to honor as well.
Well, before we move on to any other topic, we should start with this one because this is both essential in our cultural moment, useful for the heroic path, and a misunderstanding about Thelemon power as well. So for all of those reasons, we need to start here before we go into other directions.
Sounds good to me.
You might have to keep me on track because I would like to cover all 8 before we wrap up, and the last 3 or so aren't quite as important as the first few.
Okay. So we have around 6 minutes per stage.
Yeah.
Okay. So I won't distract you. What is the first stage of honor?
Radical acceptance, that the entire point of honor is that you are doing something because you have to do it.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
It's like Frodo in the ring. Everyone else at the Council of Elrond, he's the only one who picks it up. He's the only one willing to do that.
I can certainly understand that. I'm currently, as you know, resurrecting the Heraclides, and the amount of people who are responding to actually doing something rather than just hanging out.
Talking about it.
But that's the way of things. That there's... A large group of people who are interested and are willing to listen to what folks have to say or talk about it themselves, but very few are actually willing to do. And that's always been the case. You have hundreds of people, even in the Yahoo groups, and only a small handful who everybody knew were the ones conversing back and forth.
Yeah, or even in supersized groups, you'd have like a dozen or 2 dozen people.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's the first step. The first step in being honorable is stepping up and doing something, not just waiting for someone else to do it.
And you're right. That is very important in the heroic path, the ability to commit and to step up and do something about that commitment.
Because that's the very beginning of the path. The very beginning of the path is actually taking the path. Morpheus says you can talk about the path or you can walk the path.
So what is the second? Are we finished with the first step or do you want to get on to the second stage?
Yeah, basically. I don't see the need to go on about that one. That one's not...
So what would the second stage be?
Doing what must be done. Once you accept that you have to do it, you need to do it.
This is an interesting point in the journey because sometimes it takes a while to figure out how to do it. You can decide to do it and you can try different things, but until you get to that point, I found through experience, because I do a lot, that there'll come a point when it clicks and then it's all very clear. But until you get to that point of clarity, it's kind of fuzzy, and it's a lot of moving around, groping in the dark or shooting in the dark or whatever metaphor you want to use for it.
Right, because that's usually the hardest part in America and in Western civilization is actually doing it.
A lot of people believe that they can't do it.
Well, a lot of people are waiting for someone else to do it. Like when people in the magic world who are lower level people say karma will take care of that. Like, no, someone needs to do something.
And here it gets very complicated, and here it goes into the whole Age of Heroes questions. It's you might believe that something needs to be done, but there'll be people who believe otherwise. And then you've set up the opposing force, or the opposing camp, and then the camps attack each other as the question is hashed back and forth in terms of what's the right thing to do. And sometimes, because the universe can be perverse, doing the wrong thing will lead to a good result, and doing the right thing will lead to a bad result. So there's that as well. But you're right. You have to take a stand on some issues, and you have to address them. With me, one of the issues that I've been trying to address as best I could in a variety of ways is an educated electorate and the right to vote. And although I've taken a side politically and I've taken a stance publicly politically and I'm an elected official, albeit a minor one, still I keep the dialogue open with people from other parties who hold other points of view because I believe that our electorate needs to be informed. So on the podcast, we get exposed to many different perspectives, some of them drastically different from my own.
Well, that's how that's the point of democracy is.
So after taking, I'm trying to get through the stages because you asked me to make sure we cover them all. So what is the next stage after that?
Doing right.
Doing right. Okay.
That's the question: is when you have what is right? That's the difference between honor and selfishness. Doing right is when Stephen Strange sacrifices himself because there's only one timeline where we win.
Right.
Doing right is Frodo and Sam going into Mordor by themselves.
But that's hard to determine too. What is, what is the right thing to do? Like
it's usually pretty clear when you come to the actual crisis, because you can argue with yourself all you want, but at a certain point, things do start to clarify themselves about who the villains are. Because by their fruits you shall know them. You shall know who the villains are because the villains are the ones that are always troublemakers.
But on an issue, let's say, like eating meat, if you're a vegan, no eating of meat or animal products is acceptable, except that there are...
But that's the problem with fanaticism. All of those perspectives that are fanatical perspectives need to find the middle way. That's not a hero's villains thing. That's an ideology thing.
But in the ideology...
That's not an honor thing. That's ideology.
But they make use of heroes and villains in that they're heroically trying to stop the suffering of
propaganda
animals.
Propaganda always does. And the January 6th people are heroes to be able to watch Fox News. The nature of propaganda is to flip things over.
So it's a little bit more complex than determining what the right thing to do is if there are competing voices for what the right thing to do is. And
not all voices are equal. One of the things a good leader learns how to do is to understand that his intelligence officer tells him, we have a hole in our intelligence. We don't know how many people are in that fortress. We don't know if that bridge is still there. We don't know that. And when you start to weigh all voices as equal rather than trust your lieutenants and trust specialists, part of us not trusting specialists anymore is also part of the decline of honor in our society. We no longer believe that Dr. Fauci, with everything he knows about science, we should listen to Dr. Fauci because he knows more about science than we do.
I can see your point, and maybe it will be clarified by further stages of honor. But I know that's a difficult one for most people. Like, I'll give you an example with climate change. Personally believe that we should do all that we can, all that's within our power to do minimize climate change. I believe that in like extremes in terms of we need to end our dependence on fossil fuel and so forth. But a lot of voices are saying that, you know, basically climate change happens. And even though we're contributing to it or maybe hastening it a little bit, the fact is that climate change has happened in our planet long before we've had the capacity to do anything.
But we know that's a lie. There's a document from the late 80s called the Climate Denial Dossier, which is written by the oil companies, where they admit climate change is real, and then they lay out how they're going to tell the rest of us it's fake. That's an outright lie, and again, it's propaganda, so that's not a real point of view. That's an outright lie.
So how does
people that have that point of view are intentionally ignoring the facts, and that's one of the problems with trying to balance equal points of view in a world with Fox News. Is if you're not using facts, you don't really have a legitimate opinion if you don't have facts and science. You just have you're just listening to propaganda.
So how does somebody determine what propaganda would be in a world of competing voices, each claiming to be proclaiming truth?
Google it. When someone tells you something that doesn't sound real, Google it, and if it's a lie, there will be some YouTube and some British media that lay out, it's a lie, here's why it's a lie, here are the facts. Like Hunter Biden's laptop. If there were anything in Hunter Biden's laptop that were truly, truly dangerous and bad, wouldn't the Washington Post have gone through it all document by document? Wouldn't we know what was in that laptop if there was truth to it? I'm pretty sure we have enough investigative journalism in the English-speaking world that if there were a there, we would know where there was. And that's what the journalistic questions are for. That's why you need to know what, why, and where. And when you can't answer what, why, and where, and you aren't using factual reality, you're not in reality. You're angry about Mr. Potato Head or whatever because you're not what you're doing is not based on what is. You're doing based on what makes you angry or what you were told, which is a problem with social media pretending to be journalism. But that's pretty easy to see through if you actually fact-check everything, if you fact-check things that people try to both sides that don't have both sides, like climate change and January 6th don't have both sides. One side is lying. And if you're lying, you're obviously not right. You're obviously not on the right side of history. So that's fairly simple in a world with facts.
Again, I'm going to play devil's advocate again just to help define things and to bring them into a clearer perspective. But a lot of times things that were considered conspiracy theories, for instance, and again, conspiracy theories generally are not based on facts. We'll state that in the beginning. But at times it has happened that conspiracy theories proved true. When subsequent facts were released.
But the problem with believing in a conspiracy theory rather than believing in investigative journalism is the problem. But that's also part of the right-wing lie about don't believe the media and don't believe the government, only believe Tucker Carlson. Only Tucker tells you the truth. But I guess he didn't. He got in trouble for that.
That's because the deep state is out to get him.
But that's their excuse for reality. Whenever reality interferes with the right-wing model, it's the deep state. That's the world of facts and science and numbers and laws. That's reality. And if you don't live in reality, doesn't that make you crazy? Definitively?
Well, I've long argued that we're not on the physical plane, we're on the astral plane, because clearly we're living in imagination. And although we have the natural world, we deny the natural world, and we've created like our own little worlds, and therefore we're living in lies as a matter of course.
But that's the thing about doing the right thing, is a whole lot of our problems in our culture today is a result of half of our country not believing in facts, laws, and reality. You can't have a conversation with someone who doesn't live in the real world. They're crazy. Their opinion doesn't count as much as someone who lives in a world with facts and numbers and real news.
Well, I currently have health issues, and I'm very cognizant of the fact that I have health issues, and I know I can define what some of those health issues are. And as part of my quest, which is followed here on the podcast, on the Herculean physique ones especially, it's very hard to get even a medical opinion, like even on something as simple as how much protein is it healthy for you to consume? And you have doctors with all sorts of credentials that seem identical, ascribing to wildly different and contradictory views. So you can't get a clear answer as to how much protein you actually need to consume. It ultimately and eventually settles on who you choose to believe until you get more information. I'll give you a concrete example. I believe that I gave myself diabetes by following pre-steroid bodybuilding diets. I had been lactose intolerant, and before steroids, bodybuilders drank like a gallon of milk a day and ate 6 oranges, and there were a bunch of other like really weird dietary things. So I tried that. I wanted to get bigger than I was. I had a gym in my basement and heavy poundages, so I wanted to get bigger. And I followed this diet, and for a while I did. I became really huge, and I was doing really heavy poundages again like I did when I was younger, and it worked really well until the day where it no longer did. And then I started losing all those gains. I started falling down stairs and all sorts of other things, and I wound up with diabetes as a diagnosis that I've had ever since. And that's basically the body is having difficulty processing the amount of sugar that's in it, and both milk and oranges are very sugary in the scheme of things. So since that time, I've tried different dietary and lifestyle changes, and also various types of exercise. And some of them will work for a while, but opinions as to whether they're healthy for you or not change. And like, for instance, the ketogenic diet or the high-protein, high-fat Atkins-type diet, those have worked for me, for some of them for a good long while, until the day that they stopped working. Certain foods like peanut butter, that worked really well.
Well, because eventually your body reaches homeostasis, and all of those weird diets stop working, because
right.
your body balances out the keto diet and makes you drink alcohol to get your carbs you're not getting, because you're on the keto diet and your body needs carbs.
Well,
eventually your body seeks homeostasis. Well, no, but that's the whole problem with fad diets, is eventually homeostasis kicks in and it stops working.
But that's the thing. How do you determine if it's a bad diet? Because, again, doctors and nutritionists, and I've spoken to some face-to-face who've been treating me over the years, hold wildly different opinions about what you should and shouldn't do and why. And they change those opinions in time also, just like your opinions will change. So it's very, very difficult to get accurate information. So you have to educate yourself as best you can. It's the same thing with politicians, too, and being an informed electorate. There's, like, so much information to process, and you don't know what's true and what isn't true, even if you do your research very diligently. So it's very hard to establish, what's real and what isn't real a lot of times, even if you're not prone to conspiracy theories or fringe type of information.
Well, moving on, the next one is sharing credit.
Okay.
Now, when you work when you are honorable, you're part of a team, and everyone has their role on the soccer team, and you understand everyone's role on the soccer team, so you accept everyone's role, and you share credit when the goalie stops a goal and also when a striker scores a goal. However, that applies to your world.
And that's very important, too, because many people help you in moving forward. So I've always tried to acknowledge the people who help out. I have, even in my Facebook groups, like awards or levels for people who go above and beyond the call of duty in any particular area. Because you never get there alone. You always have help, whether it's visible or invisible.
And part of being honorable is not being narcissistic about your successes. It's going, well, so-and-so helped me with this and this and this and this.
And, yeah, I consider that very important because I've had people take credit for things I've done when I was much younger. And it's not very pleasant when you've broken your back and figuratively and you've solved the problem or come up with a solution, and then somebody else who you happen to be under on a diagram takes the credit for it when they had very little input. So I agree with you there.
So this is actually the result of we pulled these eight stages of honor from a thing called Cinema Psych, and he actually pulled it, and it's actually about Frodo Baggins. And he pulled it from a Hong Kong study because a guy in Hong Kong was trying to figure out whether honor was a ancient value or a modern value. And to make it a modern value, these are the eight things that honor is that he came up with less than a decade ago. So those are the sources of our data. Because you see, also, that's another thing. If you have footnotes and source your data, you're much more likely to be telling the truth. Because even if you're not completely right, at least you can say, oh, I didn't know about that National Archives report. I did not know that that was reported on CNN. Or like half the time when you and I talk, something big politically happens in the next 2 hours that we don't talk about because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
It happened at 4 o'clock on Sunday, not 10 a.m. So we don't know about it because it's in the future. But that's also intelligence gap. The first rule of spycraft is you don't know what you don't know.
That's a good adage to carry throughout your life, too. And I have adopted something very similar. You know, I don't assume that I have all the information ever. Again, it's trying to determine the best course of action based on who you happen to be and what you know at any particular point in time.
Well, when we children of Hecate talk about that, we often joke that sometimes in narration Hecate does, but little does Satori know, .. Like, uh-oh, plot twist. Plot twist, uh-oh.
Talking about giving credit where credit is due, I would like to credit Hecate for being there especially for these particular endeavors that started maybe 20 years ago. Hecate, who's been present throughout my entire life in one form or fashion, has become very present, and children of Hecate have come forth for long periods of time, like you, or shorter periods of time, to help out with the various stages in this. So I acknowledge Hecate, and I'm gathering voices of Greco-Roman and Egyptian spirituality, not in the usual sense, but you know, to have the voices and the perspectives together. And there will definitely be at least one seat for Hecate and her children.
Well, we appreciate that. And I'm sure she does too. But as we talked about in the Hecate episode, that's the interesting thing about people who have Hecate in their four but not as their number one, is she's essentially your fairy godmother. She's essentially just letting you re-roll the dice once in a while. Or sending one of her children to go, let's not do that, let's do this. Why? Mother wants us to do this. Why? I don't know. Mother says do this. You can't really argue with my mother. Mother says do this. I'm here to tell you, let's do this. Let's do this.
And I appreciate that. And enigmatic though it may sometimes be, but I do appreciate that. I appreciate all feedback and assistance.
And that leads to the next topic, which is sharing strength.
That's very important.
That's extremely important in being honorable, is you don't always have to be the strong one. It's okay to let someone else share their strength. And again, the goalie and striker analogy. We're not all good at everything.
That's very true, and it's very important in my Age of Heroes initiatives throughout the years. Yes, I'm spearheading a lot of this stuff, but I can't do everything, not just because there isn't enough time, but I don't know. I just know what I know, and other people know more, and I can do all that I can do, but other people can do more. So I appreciate the contribution of those folks, and I let them participate and acknowledge them and give them credit for it, because the Age of Heroes isn't Hercules being a hero. It's everybody being a hero. So a lot of people forget that when we form organizational structures, whether they're formal or informal. They think that, again, one person has to be the hero or they have to be the hero. Sure, you can be the hero. It's the Age of Heroes, but let other people be heroes too. And part of our responsibility in setting up some structures is to cultivate the heroic spirit in other people, whether they're involved with what we're doing or not. And you've been very good with this also, in that we focus a lot on different mythical structures in the hero path, including modern ones like comic books, movies, and television shows.
Well, that's also what this is part of a potentially longer cycle of things we could do, because this is Captain America, the labor of Hercules, this is obviously slaying Hydra. And if Hydra in the modern world is fascism, and slaying the Hydra is Winter Soldier, and to slay the Hydra in the modern world, we have to deal with all of the issues Winter Soldier makes us think about. That's tough.
My Hydra currently is diabetes, because it's been used by other people as well as a metaphor for the disease, and also the healthcare system. Somebody wrote a book. I don't have the book before me, but he likened what stands in the way of giving everybody affordable health care within our current way of doing things, too. They did it in their state, and they called it, the metaphor they used was attacking the Hydra, and they have a template. So I've read the book, and when I'm ready to start doing that with the Heraclides, I'm going to adopt that system and, of course, credit what I'm adopting. That's the Hydra. The Hydra is a very good symbol, and it can be applied to many different types of endeavors.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to be to be Captain America, to be the humble, honorable guy who finds a value in. Well, that's Captain America. I don't value institutions. I find value in individual people.
And he serves as a symbol for that very effectively.
Yeah.
And I remember in the comics, he even renounced part of what he stood for because it violated his code, as did Superman, who basically for the same types of issues, suspended temporarily his American Way dedication.
Yeah, because both of them, because of fascism, stop being Mr. Red, White, and Blue. Stop being the traditional hero.
And that was a powerful mythic warning when both champions of the American Way denounced the American Way. That was earth-shaking, although only at the time before the superhero mania, only comic book readers took notice.
And it's prescient.
Mm-hmm.
It was prescient. All of that was to come.
Just like Star Wars, the original movie, The Phantom Menace of the saga, that too is very prescient.
Well, Lucas would say it isn't prescient. He was actually talking about Nazi Germany. But these cycles repeat themselves. But we did a whole episode about politics in Star Wars a while ago.
Yes, we did.
And the next one is actually ties into that, because the next one is give mourning and comfort to people who are in pain, which also doesn't fit our modern, our weird modern ultra butch idea of masculinity. But to be, well, that also ties into respect women, which isn't actually listed on here, but part of truly being honorable is not being misogynistic. It's listening to what women have to say and helping them with their issues so they can give a feminine touch to your issues. Because that's what I've always thought. That was my problem with the female doctor in Doctor Who. I like how Capaldi put it very well at one point when he says, she's not my assistant, she's my feeler. She feels so I don't have to. Like, that's a very interesting way of explaining that, Doctor.
I missed that. I stopped following Doctor Who a while ago. I started following Doctor Who beyond casually during one of the seasons when they first brought it back. I watched the first two Doctors, and then I followed it for a while because we were talking about it. But there's so many things to follow that I had to unfollow that for a while. But that sounds
that's
awesome.
Dr. Capaldi. That's the whole Capaldi Missy Clara thing, which is right before the girl doctor, who is still technically our current doctor for a few more weeks, who is still the doctor today. As we record this, she is still the doctor. But, I mean, that's an important point, too, in honor that isn't listed in one of the eight stages, is respecting women and respecting what women are telling you.
I believe
because
that's
important. It's not just about protecting women. It's about respecting them.
I'm a Lemnian Greek, and Lemnos was the island of the Amazons in the Jason and the Argonauts film with Ray Harryhausen. And in some stories, the Lemnians would dispute some of the perspectives there, but there was matriarchy, and that's very clear. So I don't have difficulty with separating people according to gender roles and things like that. And I love women, so of course I'm going to listen to their feedback and things like that. Beyond women, it's, as you said, any group that is experiencing difficulties or whatnot. And in the Hercules myth, that's the Amazons, the girdle of the Amazons.
Mm-hmm.
And in the main mythology, he went there. He said, "Hey, I'm Hercules. What do you call it? Eurystheus asked me to take the belt." They said, "Sure, no problem," because they didn't consider the belt a magical item. It was a symbol, and they already were independent and warriors and so forth. But either Hera or an Amazon or a Greek, depending on which account you read, said that the other side was being treacherous and planned on killing them. And then fighting broke out among the ranks, and then it eventually led to fighting between the leaders, and it may have led to death or enslavement, depending on who you read. So that whole misunderstanding, I believe, needs to be addressed. And all my efforts, even though, like, Heracles is a masculine symbol, are not masculocentric. So I work with people as people, and we take it from there. So it's not, you know, it's listening to people rather than listening to women.
As a child of Akate, I have to remind people that despite the Reconstructionist perspective that makes you think I have four sisters, I have like 100 million sisters and 8 brothers. Aphrodite and Hecate both have less than a dozen sons. Aphrodite and Hecate's sons cannot play FIFA soccer against each other. We can play basketball. We can play non-FIFA soccer. But I don't think my mother has created more than a dozen boys. And when I lived with Aeneas at one point, he and I joked about that. I'm like, yeah, I think if your family plays my family in basketball, we got to use like street basketball rules.
And I'm not up on my sports, so all your metaphors were lost. But
I'm also pointing out one of the problems with the Reconstructionist orthodoxy paradigm is you're not paying attention to Rick Warden, who's telling you that Hecate has had a million daughters since Medea. Every once in a while, I bump into someone, and I'm like, oh, no, that's one of my sisters. What? Oh, no. He's one of us. How are my sisters?
Medea's voice has been part of a lot of what I've been doing less publicly, but now soon to be public. And Medea's recognized for her perspectives and, contributions to the Age of Heroes and how it unfolds. As she should have been in the original Argo legend. She wound up in Elysium. Jason, alas, did not. He wound up drunk under the keel of the Argo, which was rotting, and it fell on him and killed him.
Yeah. Whereas Medea ends up this weird sort of Greek fairy godmother character. Because after she leaves Jason, she, like, travels the world and rights wrongs and does sort of, like, Sorcerer Supreme kind of things.
And she has a dragon chariot, and she hangs out in Athens for a while as part of the Theseus legend.
Yeah. That's one of those misconceptions. If you get too hung up on the old stories, is you forget that those are the characters in those stories. All of the gods are having children as we speak. They're all getting it on somewhere. There are plenty more children of the Greek gods to come, like there are plenty more children of the Irish gods. Don't get too hung up on the ones from the old stories.
Well, and again, that is something that the Heraclides, which I'm currently working on, is stressing. Right now it's just being established in a Facebook group, and I'm introducing it locally. But eventually go much further afield. And I'm making sure that I point out in there that the Heraclides are not just Greek. I've included Alexander, who probably was a descendant of Hercules, the Spartans, the 300, they claim descent from Hercules, and so forth. But the Celts, Celtus is a son of Hercules, and he was the father of many dynasties throughout Europe and Asia Minor. So I'm going to slowly start introducing that too. That it's open to everybody, not just people of a particular bloodline or cultural background.
But I mean, that's part of listening to women is, in my case, most of the women in my life are either daughters of Hecate or daughters of Amorrhagit. So it's very important I listen to what their goddess is telling me. It's very important for me to listen to what's bothering my sisters. Because one of my sisters this week was complaining about how she was trying to explain something that was wrong at her workplace to her boss, and she gets so frustrated, she's like, you wouldn't have said that to me if I was a man. And when she told me the story, I'm like, no, he probably wouldn't.
Yeah, that is something we'll need to address. And the misogyny and strict gender roles, those are starting to rear their ugly head again. A lot of things I believe that we had resolved and moved on from are currently coming back and saying, no, we went nowhere.
You went in the opposite direction. We've gone backwards since 1998.
Yes, very true.
There's a really interesting thing about that by a British politician named Rory Stewart, who explains how we thought 1996 was the end of history, but it only gets worse from there because of the endless war. Because anyone who gives me and one of my friends, who also used to be Washington Center intern, an issue about, like, why did we leave? Like, it's a 90-minute thing by a British politician. You probably don't want to listen to it, but he explains why I did it. In the world of magic, I at least can still make a difference every day. In the world of politics, I'm not sure I even wanted to go to work.
Can you send me a link to that? You probably have, but
find that. I'm going to have to find that again. I'll send you a link to it, but I have to find it again.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And where are we in the 8 stages?
We are almost done. You know, the only one that remains is is that to accept accolades with humility. Like at the end of Lord of the Rings, Aragorn says, "My friend, you bow to no one." Because you're sharing in the credit.
Right.
No one's the rock star.
I believe that as well.
Like, even when other people talk to me about my group of super friends in New Orleans, I always remind them, there were 7 of us. I didn't do everything. I wouldn't have wanted to. There were 7 of us. With very different superpowers. Very different weird magics, but there were 7 of us. It was I've never been a one man band, really.
Nor
I have the power to do that, but I just don't like it.
Nor do I.
And there are the 8 stages. Now we can go on to where we want to talk about. Well, like you brought up the thing about when Superman and Steve Rogers both stopped wearing the red, white, and blue. And Wonder Woman at one point does the same thing as well.
And she moves to London, I believe, or someplace
yeah.
in Ireland. Yeah.
She moves to London and becomes a librarian or something.
Yeah, that spoke to me very powerfully, and I started looking around at what was going on in my world a bit more acutely, after that happened, because I was and have been a comic book reader on and off throughout my entire life. And when that started happening, it's like I really needed to become more aware of my world and expanded my circle of what I allow into my consciousness.
But I mean, that's the important things about living mythology and pop culture, that people who aren't attuned to pop culture, first of all, you don't know what people are talking about. First of all, you are at a major disadvantage because you don't know what people are talking about because you don't know what people are talking about. And you're also missing out on, whoa, Captain's Worthy? What's that about? Huh? You don't know? Huh? Huh? Do you live in a cave? How do you not know that?
Because sometimes we do live in caves. It's like I'm aware of politics, and I'm involved in politics to some degree, in a very minor way, but I am involved. But before I became involved, my circle of awareness in terms of what was happening politically was relatively small. And as I become involved, it's become larger and larger. I guess before I started expanding my consciousness in that direction, I was living in a cave insofar as that was concerned.
Well, living in a cave is a double pun if you're a child of Hecate, because back in the Homeric hymn, Hecate does live in a cave.
Okay.
And it's also a reference to Plato's cave. So there's that going on, but it is also the shock value it has on a child of Hecate for me to just drop a pop culture or music reference and go like, Siamese Dream turned 30 this week. One of the most important albums of my generation turned 30 on September 14th.
Wow.
Yeah.
And again, not up on my music, so the reference doesn't clarify things in my mind, but it's a pop culture reference, and many people are into music more so than me, so I'm sure that spoke to them. But I'm impressed that it turned 30.
I'm impressed that it turned 30, and it made all of us go back and listen to it again and think about, well, Bono says something about how sometimes songs change your opinion, sometimes songs make you do things. And all of us in my little group of seven can all point to Siamese Dream as sometimes albums make you do things.
Yes, very true.
Well, because one of the songs on that album starts with Hipsters Unite, Come Alive for the Big Fight to Rock the World.
Mm-hmm.
Like, us seven dudes hanging out here in New Orleans. Hipsters Unite. Hipsters.
I've been recently, this seems unconnected, but it really isn't. Part of what my life journey has done, especially now that I'm in my 60s, is I get to see the things that formed me in a new light, and I get to widen my perspective in terms of what was that really all about? Why did I have to find resonance with this? And when I've gotten rid of so many things that I've acquired during my lifetime, I'm holding on to this. And part of what I'm looking at very closely now is the heroic path. And we've talked about this privately. So even though we've discussed things in terms of three levels, currently I'm finding a fourth. You know, where...
Well, that's the thing about how within... that there are different kinds of superheroes. That people who are going to take the heroic path will have their 10 levels to become more like Captain America, whereas someone who's going to take the magical path will have 10 levels to be more like Stephen Strange.
Or idol of your choice.
Well, I mean, those are the two easy examples of two. Those are the two easiest examples I can go into more detail about.
Yeah, like for instance, in my Heracleitus, Hercules, and then the sons and daughters of Hercules, and Hercules, like Hecate and the Meridian, has mostly children of one particular gender, but has children of both. Even though males are the predominant incarnating vehicles.
Yeah. But that also is just the nature of most of the gods don't produce 50-50 with their children. Apollo does. I don't really know who else does. I can say that's probably true for Apollo. Almost everybody else is somewhere between the extreme of Apollo and the extreme of Hercules with women and the extreme with Aphrodite with men.
Athena.
Recently, I was thinking about this because my birthday is coming up. I was trying to make a list of like who in this world is a child of Hecate who's a boy other than myself, and I don't have a list of 12 yet. I haven't gotten to 12 yet. I don't have 12 brothers in this world that I can think of.
Athena tends to have more than a share of male children as well. And they identify themselves as her paladins or her children.
And that's one of the major differences between Athena and the Morrigan, is Athena tends to have boys, whereas the Morrigan tends to have girls. In fact, one of the interesting things about the Seven is I'm a boy who's a child of Hecate, and one of the other boys was a boy who was a son of the Morrigan. Like, wow. They are sparing no expense this time.
Yeah, the Morrigan plays very heavily into our family mythos. Our anniversary is on Halloween, in part because that is when the Dagda, who's often associated with Hercules, and the Morrigan, who's often associated with Athena, they joined up on Halloween. There
well,
are
a quick
other
update since I am the voice of the Morrigan in your house. What she has done to my life since I took that key is there's a group in Ireland called the Irish Pagan School, and the leader of the Irish Pagan School is a authorized tour guide at the Morrigan's most sacred spot, the Cave of the Cats. So at some point I will put you in touch with them because they are the most authentic, the most real Morrigan Dagda people.
Oh, very
awesome. And the other thing that happened is, since I did that is one of my housemates has been falling asleep to Warhammer 40K audiobooks. So that's a really weird version of a world with Cthulhu-like villains, super warriors, psychic abilities, and magic. That's a really weird part of the multiverse. It's really cool, but I am very aware, considering what those 40K novels have been that I've heard while I'm trying to fall asleep, that it's the Morrigan's influence. That she's making me think about the Space Legions. What she wants me to think about is Space Legions as the Hurlock Path. The Primuses of the God Emperor. What a bunch of neat guys those are.
and I'm on that with my Hercules and the Space Gods initiatives, which is a journey that's been proceeding now. The focus before was on Olympian star seeds, you know, and now it's on planetary and constellation gods. So that's a journey that's been active my whole life. It took a detour in Star Trek for around 15 years. So.
Well, we're going to get live action 40K in it. Well, the cartoon of 40K was actually done by Peter Krung, who did the cartoon about Alexander the Great called Reign the Conqueror, and more famously did Aeon Flux. So he's a Warhammer 40K cartoon that is incredible.
I believe I found a copy of that. I was looking at it the other day, and it's in my collection now, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, the Alexander one.
It's incredible. It's incredible. If you want to do a whole episode on that, I watched that all the way through like 8 times.
So we'll
it's one of my favorite cartoons of all time. Well, it does a weird... Because it's Peter Krung, he does very weird things about magic in it and very weird things about character motivation. So it's very interesting to rewatch the live-action Alexander movie after you've seen Reign the Conqueror, because they're completely different stories, even though they're based on... Even though they have the same characters and the same battles, it's very hard to tell they're the same story.
And on that note, our conversation is almost over. How can people reach you, Satori?
I would still prefer they reach me through you. But as we, as you have given me some latitude with Thelema, those of you who are the chosen and the hidden who can hear me, let Hercules know that you wish to come to the temple. He and I have discussed the Temple of Four Doors. We just need you to find it and join us and do it. Because today has been all about doing an honor and responsibility, my brothers and sisters. And it is our job to always lead the way because we are the strongest.
And
that applies to you, children of Akate, too. That applies to my brother, my sisters, too. Not just the ones I see every week.
And I will add enigmatically, the age of Heru sounds mysteriously like the age of heroes.
No, we're in the age of Aquarius now. We're in the age of Aquarius now. We're in the age of information and misinformation. We definitively crossed the line not too long ago.
So stay tuned for more
on
that
and
other things. And I want to thank Satori, not only for this podcast, but for his role in my adventures, my Herculean adventures. And I look forward to our next conversation, which will probably be in a few minutes. So thanks again, my friend. Be well, and I look forward to our adventures together.
Okay. Talk to you in a minute.
Okay. Talk to you then. Good night, everybody.